Patrick Bellegarde-Smith is a professor in the Department of Africology at the University of Wisconsin, where he researches in the areas of African and Neo-African religions and African diasporic social thought and philosophy. He holds a PhD in International Relations, Comparative Politics, and History, and is the author of two books on Haiti and an editor of two anthologies on voodoo in Haiti. He joined us by phone to discuss the role of spirituality in the slave rebellion of 1791. And the role of spirituality in contemporary Haitian society. Hello, Professor Patrick Bellegarde-Smith. How are you today?
I'm fine considering the events of recent days.
Well, I'm glad that you can join us today to tell us a little bit more about your perspective on Haiti and also historically about the country.
I'm glad to be here.
I'd like to begin, actually, if we can reflect on this last month, I'd like to ask what has been the most important or most frequent lesson that you have had to impart on willful and unwillful students about Haiti?
Well, one thing that comes to mind immediately is how ignorant people are about history, its culture, its tradition, its history. And I'm not talking just about students, that I kind of expected, but from reporters, generally speaking, and from scholars even, who do work on Haiti, and do not have the faintest clue about what the country is all about.
And now you obviously have a personal investment in this history. You were born into the Haitian elite, but at an early age, you developed a political consciousness that helped you overcome the myopic view of Haitian society that you inherited. Can you briefly discuss that stage of personal development?
Yes, and I want to point out immediately that I'm not unique in terms of Haitian society and members coming from that particular elite who have cut their links with that elite. And one person who comes to mind immediately is the Haitian writer Jacques Roumain, who was one of the co-founders of the Haitian Communist Party with my uncle by marriage, Max Dicourt. And the Haitian Communist Party consisted of light-skinned, highly educated, well-off, if not to say actually wealthy, Haitian elite members. I come to this in a very personal way in terms of having grown up in Haiti in a middle-class or lower-middle-class neighborhood because my grandfather and his family, his children, had refused to move from that neighborhood for all kinds of reasons. And my connections at school, growing up in Haiti, with members of the middle class and working class indicated to me that something had gone totally awry. And my family did not sustain me in seeking friendship among working class or middle class Haitians. It indicated to me that this was at the root cause of Haitian political instability, together, of course, with disastrous economics affecting 90% of Haitian society, that something had to be done. And in my career as a writer, as a scholar on Haitian matters, I have tried to pursue that line that indicated to me that Haiti cannot become complete until whole Haitians participate in the body politic.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, can we trace that line back to an earlier point in Haiti's history? If we can explore the role, and I guess we would bring spirituality into the discussion here and get your expertise on that. Can we explore the role of spirituality in the slave rebellion that began in 1791? And in particular, can you tell us more about the gathering of slaves and Bon Claiment, and how Africans of different nations and different spiritualities came together to form a common interest in rebellion?
Yes, Haitian society actually gelled very, very, very early in the struggle for national independence. And you had a number of wars being pursued almost simultaneously in Saint-Domingue, now Haiti, from various groups and factions and social classes in the country. And one thing that we need to remember, for instance, is that Haitians consist of several hundred different ethnic groups from West Africa and Central Africa, all the way from Senegal down to Angola, at both ends of the spectrum. And they had coalesced fairly rapidly into a fairly homogeneous, and I hesitate to use the word, but that's the only one I can think of, a fairly homogeneous culture that evolves very, very early. One of the things that occurred almost simultaneously, immediately in Haiti was, for instance, the collapsing of various religious elements from West Africa and Central Africa into a consolidated Haitian Creole religion. Now we call it Vodou. But the religion, as is the case in Africa, does not have a name, did not have a name. Now that we give it a name, names occur in the context of many religions being practiced in one territory. In Haiti, we did not adhere by this because there was one unifying religion to which the enslaved African adhered to. And this, by the way, points out to a distinction between it and what is practiced next door in Cuba, in La Regla de Ocha, and in Brazil with Candomblé and Umbanda, where these systems, for instance, are more clearly Yoruba descended. In Haiti, you have a combination, a recombining of many different religious elements throughout the African continent, and in a minor way with the Roman Catholic, French Roman Catholicism. Haitians were born, for the most part, on the African continent. Those that fought for independence were not necessarily born in Saint-Domingue. So religion certainly was a big factor in terms of coming together. They spoke any number of African languages at that time, but they were able to unite, and unite they did to wage independence. And it's interesting that all Haitians, of whatever social class, of whatever ideological bent, have agreed that the mythological, perhaps, beginnings of the Haitian Revolution were that famous Vodou ceremony at Bois Caïman, at which Bookman Duty, born in Jamaica, presumably a Muslim, but also a Vodou priest, and there is no contradiction in that, and a woman, Cécile Fatima, a Mambo, a female priest, officiated at that ceremony. And it was decided that a general revolt would occur in August 1791 that would eventually lead the country to independence. So that all Haitians agree on that particular event, whether it occurred or not is a different story, but we assume that it did exist. And that was a unifying element, but it was also an ideological foundation for the Haitian state.
Now, it's interesting that you mentioned all Haitians. One of the questions that I wanted to ask was regarding how national memory is constituted around that date in 1791, and specifically how that spiritual ceremony will have been written or remembered. And I was going to assume that perhaps it would be remembered differently between different classes. And one of the reasons that I make that assumption is because I guess certain factions would say that it had it cursed the people. And, yes. And where, how does that come into the discussion?
Well, it doesn't play at all. That religion certainly is more than a religion. It is spiritual discipline that incorporates within itself all systems and fields, whether it be science, technology, theology, and the like. There are no dark connotations to it except those brought in by the white man in Europe and North America to this date for the past 200 years or so. You see, in Haitian Vodou, there is no Satan. Satan does not exist. Hell and heaven do not exist. The spirit world does not deal that way. So the negative connotations come from the West. And may I mention that Christianity itself was the handmaiden, the tool used by slave owners to further justify their oppression of enslaved Africans and enslavement in the first place. Christianity was used by slave owners to enslave Africans. That was an easy justification. So if we're going to talk about dark connotation, it behooves us to remember that Christianity was used in the most negative way by the world powers which were Christians at that time and still remain Christian to this day. Voodoo had no such connotation. Mm-hmm. One cannot conduct a pact with Satan when that entity does not even exist. Mm-hmm. And so it's really interesting because we see the religious hegemony of the West rearing its ugly head again. And the intellectual hegemony that it has, even on people of color to date, who inhabit the Western world and have become Americanized or Canadianized or Frenchified, as mm-hmm. the case may be.
Now, if we can jump a bit further into more recent history, while in power, Aristide decriminalized, I think the Lavalas movement decriminalized the Voodoo religion. Can you explain who first made it illegal? And this will just revisit what you brought up in the last answer, and expand on the repressive actions that are referred to, and if you can help me with the pronunciation, as rejeté?
As rejeté, okay. Rejeté. It's really interesting because all Haitian leaders, certainly those of the first hour, during the struggle for independence and soon thereafter, were members of that religion. They also realized that because it was the religion itself was so powerful in unifying the enslaved Africans towards a rebellion, that they sought to control it. And if they could not control it, they sought to ban it. But friends of mine who are Haitian scholars doing work in Haiti have assured me that every single president of Haiti, every last one of them, have been believers, even if they did not practice, because one does not have to practice a religion to be a part of its worldview. And I'm including light-skinned Haitians, bourgeois, aristocratic Haitian presidents as well, who had their temples in their original village, because we all have an original village we come from. And we need to remember that even elite light-skinned Haitians have something in common with dark-skinned Haitians, and that is an African woman at the beginning of their own line. Their fathers may have been French, but their mothers were African. And what we share in common in all of Haiti is a black woman at the beginning of the national project in Haiti. So there were persecutions, and those persecutions were established not only by Haitian government, who wanted to control the religion itself, knowing that if it happened once, it could happen again, that rebellions could come out of this. And indeed, it came about that Jean-Claude Duvalier was overthrown by a combination of forces, including voodoo temples throughout Haiti, who were conniving to get rid of him as well, as certain groups in the Roman Catholic Church and other groups in the country itself. And so it's really interesting to know that the Haitian worldview, even if one happens to be Protestant, is very much impregnated by a voodoo worldview, and there's no getting around to it.
Hmm. Well, now, you mentioned that there were multiple forces that were contributing to the changes that took place in governance in Haiti. And I wanted to ask about Aristide and how his aspirations and goals for governance, they were informed by liberation theology. Can you discuss how liberation theology informed the Lavalas movement?
Well, I'm not too sure this is entirely correct. There was some of that.
Okay.
There was certainly some of that. He was a Roman Catholic priest. He's been defrocked by the Vatican, of course, and he has since married and has children. That was part of it. But it is also known that he has strong sympathies with the national religion of Haiti, voodoo. And that was very much in his mind as well as the tenets of Catholicism. He was certainly a flag bearer for liberation theology, understood Haitian style, and he certainly pegged his political inspiration from that, which made it, by the way, a little bit more acceptable in the Western world than would anything else have been. One cannot right off the bat or right offhand talk about voodoo and gain any kind of respect in the Caribbean, in Latin America, in North America, or in Western Europe for that matter. So one has to be very cagey about it. One has to be exceedingly careful as to how one handles that situation. And this is one of the reasons, for instance, that Haitian elites in general, and because he becomes a Roman Catholic priest, he becomes a part of that elite by definition. One has to emphasize the French language. One has to emphasize the Christian roots of Haiti, even though those two elements really have a very meager hold on the Haitian public in general. About 20% of Haitians know French, 20%, while 100% of Haitians speak the national language, Haitian. And while all Haitians will say that they are Christians, either Catholic or Protestant, all Haitians also understand what voodoo is all about, and even if they decry it publicly, they still understand its hold on the Haitian psyche. As a matter of fact, I know of priests in Haiti, voodoo priests, who absolutely will deny knowing anything about the religion, and they are priests of that religion. And I know Haitians who don't speak a word of French. Tell everybody in the U.S. and in Canada, they only speak French when they don't know a single word of it.
A lot of our impressions then in the West or in North America construct the majority of Haitians as being Christian or Catholic. And so is that based on the fact that the response from Haitians would favor, like if they were asked what they practiced?
Yes, of course. And also many Haitians will deny being black. And you have the evidence in front of your eyes that they are blue, black, midnight blue. But they say, I'm not black. Mm-hmm. I only speak French. I only practice. I'm a Protestant. In the very same way. Look, all Haitians say they are Christians because they want to be looked upon by favor by whites as they travel abroad. That's the bottom line. In the very same way that a French government lists Haiti and dozens of African countries as francophonic countries, as French-speaking countries, when those countries don't speak French. And Haiti comes to mind first and foremost because the overwhelming majority of Haitians do not speak French and don't understand it. Yet French was, until 1987, the only official language of the Republic of Haiti. And Haitians could not understand a word of what was being debated in Parliament, not understand a word in the courts of justice when they were dragged by the court system there. Yet we went pretending. And this is part of the schizophrenic attitude that blacks often have worldwide. But this is seen especially severely in Haiti because it was indeed the first black republic of modern times. And this is a word that it did not apply to itself necessarily, but it was given that word by the white world. And 200 years later, you don't see Haiti without the word black republic in front of it. Or also with the most poverty ridden, the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. And it is repeated every other sentence, the black republic. So is the United States, for instance, the white republic? I wonder. Or the Canada, the white state governed by the Queen of England? I don't know. And so we have a way of pegging these folks we don't like. And and when we say the Black Republic, we do not mean it in a kind way, not at all. Mm-hmm. It is to give you the impression that something sordid and horrible is happening there. It's a Black Republic, after all. What else do you expect?
Mm-hmm. Well, now I'm glad that you've made these points because I have one final question, and this relates to your speaking here at York University next month at a lecture that has been titled "Haiti: New Paradigms for National Development." As if people mattered. So can we end on a point of hope? Can you briefly discuss what vision you will present and how it supports the people of Haiti?
Yes, you see, Haiti, over the last 20 years or so, since the overthrow of Jean-Claude Duvalier in 1987, has been in the process of reinventing itself socially, reinventing itself politically, reinventing itself economically. Now, after the disaster of the earthquake a month ago, it is also in the process of reinventing itself physically. One-third of the Haitian population has been affected. The latest statistics that were given this morning in the news is that upwards of 230,000 people have died in Port-au-Prince and surrounding cities. And so my hope is that We are going to bring everything together, Haitians in Haiti and Haitians abroad, to build the country, but build it on a very solid ground in terms of its politics, in terms of its society itself, its culture, its religion, and economically. And Haitians will have to take the lead. Unfortunately, it seems that the U.S. wants to interfere again, and it keeps interfering, and every time it does so, it gets worse. The Haitian situation gets worse. Now, it is interesting to me to reflect upon the earthquakes that occurred in Haiti in the 19th century. There were massive earthquakes in that country more than 100 years ago. Haiti, without foreign aid, rebuilt itself, and it can do so again. This time, we need help because the destruction is more massive than before. But that help must be given selflessly by foreign powers, and they cannot dictate the terms of the Haitian renaissance, of the rebirth of Haiti. Haitians will have to do that. There will be attempts by foreign governments, such as those of the United States, Canada, and France, to interfere. And it may be well-meaning, and I'm sure that their hearts are in the right place, but they don't know that this is not to be done. Haiti is an independent country, and it has to take its future in its own hands.
Professor Bellegarde-Smith, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your views on these topics.
My pleasure.